Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 19th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in just a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including a report that Canada will allow U.S. corn to immediately move northward without incurring a $1.65 tariff, and news that some feathers seem to have been ruffled in Washington as the Bush administration moves Rob Portman up in the administrative ranks. Some think it may send the wrong signal from USTR to the WTO. And don't forget, we'll talk to Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City just after the bottom of the hour today. And along the way, we'll check in with the U of I's Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. May contract in the wheat pit at 354 and three quarters, down a quarter of a cent today. July futures, 367 and three quarters, down a half. Kansas City wheat settled the May at 446 and three quarters, down five and three quarters. Corn futures now May contract in Chicago, 238 and a half, off three quarters. July at 250. They were down three quarters as well. September's at 259 and three quarters, down three quarters. And Dease corn, down a quarter of a cent for the December harvest month at $2.72. Soy complex beans May contract 574, penny and a half lower. July at 587 and three quarters, down two. August contract 593, down two and a quarter. And November beans at 607 and a half, down two and a quarter. May bean meal at 175.40, down 230 for the day. May bean oil at 23.89, up 64. From the Mercantile Exchange, April feeder cattle 103.87 and a half, 15 cents higher. April live cattle at 82.82 and a half, and they were up 20 cents for the day. May lean hogs at $64.50. finished 85 cents higher on the day. Crude oil May contract, a new contract high made today at $72.40. Current price at $71.90, up 55 cents. And the gold now trading at $632.60, up $12.60. Silver at $13.76, up 42 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we included the outside markets in the beginning of the closing market report today because they seem to be having the most influence on lots of things happening around the world. Tell me about it, please.
Well, first of all, there's a Outlook meeting in Charleston, Illinois tonight by the Coles County Farm Bureau. It rained a big inch of rain in a lot of parts of Coles County, and they're going to have a marketing meeting, a panel, and hopefully everybody can be there. Well, it's big business. Some of the New York commodities that are being traded, not only was crude oil higher, gold and silver were higher, and the U.S. dollar weaker. In theory, a cheaper U.S. dollar makes our commodities cheaper to sell abroad, which is good news for the Chicago Board of Trade futures contracts. But the metals market and gold and silver and even crude oil indicates that, you know, there might be a whiff of inflation, and of course that's also good. The private weather forecasters were mixed as far as the community is concerned about just how dry the Midwest is going to be next week and just how much rain the western wheat growing areas are going to be. So, you know, that verdict is still going to be another couple of days before it comes in. But as you mentioned, the big news continues to be this runaway energy market and a runaway gold and silver market. It's reminiscent, particularly in the metals markets, of the go-go days in the 70s when we had the Hunt brothers basically cornering the silver market, and silver was substantially higher, almost 50 cents an ounce back in those days, but it still reminds me of those go-go days of limit moves in that commodity.
Any concerns given the runaway price of energy and the gold and silver moves higher?
Well, I think that I'm sure that it's being watched by every major commodity player in the world. You know, there's some legitimate reasons. You know, for example, the Indian economy is booming. They found a big vein of industrial and also regular diamonds. They're buying gold and precious metals that turn those diamonds into beautiful rings and jewelry. It's creating a economic boom for that region of the country. And, of course, silver market's rallying. China's using that metal for industrial purposes. And, of course, that new world economy is using a lot of crude oil. That's one reason we're seeing major rallies in that commodity. And, of course, the indirect use, of course, with soy diesel. The funds bought 10,000 contracts of that commodity today. And, of course, corn and ethanol and being turned into a competitive energy product. It's a good product. And so there's a lot of intertwined and interconnected commodities throughout the trading sessions, not only in Chicago but New York and around the world.
Dave Dickey pointed out to me that last night in the overnight trade, the December corn contract punched into 275. Didn't manage to make it there today. Is that anything we need to be worried about? And have farmers been rewarding the market with either sales or acres?
Well, we're getting a lot of questions about these multiple-year sales. You know, that is only this December, but further out.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, with a runaway energy market and inflation, I'd throw a caution flare up to everyone about being too bearish way out there in years to come. The other thing that's happening is that there is this difference between the cash grain and the futures price. The basis levels continue to still be very wide, and also the carry in the market is also very big. There was an article late in the trading session here that China probably won't import corn, but they're probably very comfortable with their supply until their new crop comes on, and that probably means no major export program. The corn market is wanting dry fields out here in the Midwest so we can get things planted. One meteorologist said, be careful, the eastern corn belt's still going to be pretty wet. We got a half inch, a quarter of an inch, no, four-tenths of an inch of rain here in Oakland. It's very wet here, and very little field work is going to be done, at least in this area, this week.
The farmer's not tending to get worried yet, though, I suppose.
Well, they're worried. You betcha. That's the topic of conversation, and the big major shift from beans to corn is probably being slowed down a little bit. The high energy costs of putting anhydrous ammonia on is a major market factor to keep that shift from taking place in a big way. And I noticed on Good Friday there's still a lot of anhydrous to be put on. So there's a major amount of field work to be done. It can be done very quickly. But this is, you know, we're moving in time quickly, and there is, you know, not a wide open, clear weather forecast in the forecast either.
Are you concerned that the bean market might turn southward if the planters don't roll fairly soon?
Well, you know, this is one of the continuing layers of bearishness we're adding onto that commodity. I know in the Successful Farming magazine there's a new technology being developed. It's converting soybean oil into soy diesel. The soybean oil market has just been unrelenting this week of just rallying on every new tick in the crude oil market. So there is this general idea that at some point in time in the future, soybean oil will be converted to diesel fuel in a big way.
Anything from the Mercantile Exchange?
Rally time over at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And, of course, there's a lot of conversations at the highest levels of government about cattle to Japan. And the Japanese, I think, are from sources, at least public sources that come across the radio, indicate that there's at least the Japanese prime minister is showing a willingness to make the deal, and I think that that's a big positive step. And I know the Chinese the president that's visiting the U.S. at this time, they lifted their ban, and there's a lot of big hugs and the warm smiles with all the receptions I see on the West Coast.
And it looks like the South Koreans may lift their ban as well.
Well, we hope so. And, you know, there's big meetings with Bill Gates, Henry Kissinger, and you name it. He's basically going to be touching a lot of hands and visiting a lot of people in the U.S.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather. Our own Mike Sola forecast for tonight across the two-state region calls for partly cloudy skies, some showers, a few thunderstorms possible, mainly in the far eastern part of Illinois and in Indiana. Lows will range, he says, from 42 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, Mike says, partly sunny skies, a chance for a few thunderstorms, mainly in Indiana. The highs tomorrow from 68 in northwestern Illinois to 78 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now to take a complete look at the agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Canadian International Trade Tribunal has ruled that imported U.S. corn has not hurt and is not a threat to hurt the Canadian corn industry. The ruling immediately overturns a provisional $1.65 tariff on unprocessed corn from the U.S. The Canada Border Services Agency originally instituted the tariff after ruling that the dumping and subsidizing of U.S. corn may be harming Canadian production. Corn producers who initiated the case say they may appeal the ruling after the CITT reveals a reasoning for its decision. That's expected to happen on May 3rd. Ethanol industry leaders say don't blame higher gas prices on ethanol. In a joint press conference yesterday, the American Farm Bureau Federation, National Corn Growers Association, and Renewable Fuels Association lashed out at reports that cited ethanol as a culprit to rising prices at the gas pump. The argument is that ethanol supplies will not be able to keep up with summer driving demand, thus driving up the price of ethanol and then gasoline. RAF President Bob Dineen tried to ease worries about ethanol's availability, although he did say that not all ethanol blended with gasoline this year will be domestically produced. Dineen says despite a 54-cent per gallon tariff on ethanol imports, he expects ethanol imports to jump this year.
The tariff that is in place is not a barrier to entry at all. Brazilian ethanol or any other imports can indeed compete effectively, and does when the market demands it, and it likely will this spring.
American Farm Bureau Federation President Bob Stallman says the real culprit in high gas prices is not ethanol, it's record high oil prices. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley says the appointment of U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman as director of the Federal Office of Management and Budget may or may not hurt the Doha round of world trade talks. Grassley says the move could send mixed signals to other WTO nations regarding U.S. dedication to a successful Doha conclusion. Deputy U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab was named as Portman's replacement. President George Bush expressed confidence in Schwab's abilities to successfully conclude 18 pending free trade deals.
Susan will work hard to conclude these agreements and ensure that American goods, services, and crops are treated fairly in overseas markets.
Schwab tried to allay Grassley's concerns.
Last September, the President set clear trade priorities for the United States in his speech to the UN General Assembly. His vision guides USTR's ongoing efforts to secure an ambitious outcome to the Doha Development Round negotiations in the WTO. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to generate global economic growth and to lift millions out of poverty. And it will continue to be a top priority for this administration.
Portman says he grew tired of the global travel required by the USTR job. South Korea is sending representatives to the U.S. this week and may send more next week as part of an effort to resume imports of U.S. beef. A team from South Korea is expected to arrive in the U.S. this week to confirm the age of the animal in a recent mad cow case in Alabama. A USDA official says if South Korea's concerns about the cow are alleviated, a second delegation will come to the U.S. next week to begin inspecting 38 U.S. beef processing facilities. Meanwhile, U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns says he received confirmation early Tuesday that a Japanese cow under 20 months of age did not test positive for BSE.
I am able to confirm that that test was actually negative, that there was no BSE, and I just got that word mid-morning, so I'd be pretty confident that that was hot off the press when I got it.
Japan did confirm that a six-year-old cow had mad cow disease, the nation's 25th case of BSE. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, the planting season has started in earnest in the Midwest. We'll explore how farmers in Illinois can use their limited downtime this spring to stay up to date with the latest crop developments. The tractors are rolling, and the crop production specialists at the University of Illinois are swinging into action. Each week during the growing season, the researchers in the U of I's Department of Crop Sciences pen articles on the latest crop developments. They'll go into a finished product called the Bulletin. It can be read online for free at www.ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. This week, Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi reminds farmers to plant non-BT corn refuge areas. The use of BT corn for insect management has become so commonplace, he writes, that it's easy to overlook some of the simplest and most important recommendations, i.e. planting a non-BT refuge for insect resistance management. A planting non-BT corn refuge is required for all types of BT corn, whether the BT corn is intended for control of corn rootworms, European corn borers, or both, and whether the brand is YieldGuard or Herculex. The basic rule is 20% non-BT corn refuge and 80% BT corn, preferably all in the same field, again, regardless of the target insect or brand of corn grown. On the subject of corn, U of I agronomist Emerson Nafziger takes up the corn after corn debate and how planting the crop continuously differs than when it follows soybeans. He says it's not by much, but there are some points of contention. Hybrid selection, for instance, for corn following corn remains a rather inexact science. There's not much to suggest a good hybrid in a corn-soybean rotation will maintain that ranking when following corn. Nafziger says choosing defensive hybrids might make sense. If corn yields were much reduced last year, corn following corn in 2006 has a few advantages. First, there is less crop residue, so there should be less underground interference for this year's crop. And remember, Nafziger says, to give credit for unused nitrogen from last year. Because most fields with corn following corn were tilled last fall, working and planting this spring will be slightly different from planting into less tilled soybean stubble. Be sure to avoid working these fields when it's too wet. Related to that point, corn following corn tends to respond more to management practices, such as protection from rootworm, that protect the roots and provide conditions for good root growth. Strong-rooted hybrids might be another way to help corn that follows corn, but this should not be the only basis for selection. Plant populations should not be different for corn following corn and corn following soybean. Most producers should be aiming to establish 28 to 32,000 plants per acre. There also may be a reason to watch fields more closely for fungal disease when corn follows corn, especially if there's a significant residue left on the surface after planting, though Nafziger says the severity of the diseases like gray leaf spot may be affected as much by tillage method and air movement, for example, when fields are bordered by trees, as by the previous crop. You can read more from Emerson Nafziger, Kevin Steffi, and the other crop production and protection specialists at the University of Illinois on the web. The address is ipm.uiuc.edu/bulletin. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Joining us now to take our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Tell me about the basis to begin with. Has it widened out over the last week?
The basis is struggling to get a little better and continues to do so just a penny or so at a time as far as corn train values into the southeast. But, you know, the Midwestern processors seem to be getting better on their bean basis bids, but the rail basis just isn't keeping up very much. So the rail basis in beans just isn't coming up as well as corn at this time.
I hate to say it this way, but you've been the bear among the crew of our analysts for quite some time, on and off, as people have turned to the upside occasionally. You have often looked at the burdensome supply and said, we need to make sure that we have something sold coming into the new year. For the crop season, you maintain that stance?
I still do. I just think any rally should be met with some farmers selling if they don't have very much on. You know, you got to be freely into beans into next year, but for right now, we've got the biggest on-farm inventory we've had in a long time, and there's a lot of them out there to move, and these processors don't seem to be getting all that hungry. And with the bird flu, if we ever have it here in the United States, why, this bean market is due for a big sell-off. And, of course, here again, if we have a genuine rust scare, that could all change it. Yeah, I'm still a bear.
And for the bear, for the corn?
Well, you know, corn probably needs a sell-off here in the near term. I mean, I think we've gotten a little bit high, and they seem to be trading maybe 145 to 150, but there's no doubt that there's some bean acres going to go back to corn, and if we have a benign weather year, then this corn could go up a little bit, but you can't be overly friendly at this point.
Farmers in your area making any headway at all in the field?
Very little. I mean, we've got some corn planted on sand ground, but there was a gentleman in here this morning from over around Brazil, that's 15 miles east of here, and he hasn't done a thing, not even any anhydrous. It's just been every rain that comes along he gets. And so we're still behind in this area, Todd, as far as planning and doing field work is concerned.
It seems to me that this is pretty par for the course. I've watched the weather come up through Illinois and Indiana for 20, 25 years. I came, of course, from the very central part of the state of Illinois around Springfield. And they're always about 2 weeks ahead of the eastern part of Illinois, the western part of Indiana, and it looks to me that that will be the case again this year. The rain hasn't fallen in great amounts in some of those areas, and I checked with my brothers over the weekend, and they had maybe 20% of their corn crop in the ground already. So there are places that are being put in the ground, but not here in eastern Illinois and the western part of Indiana.
That's
as well.
True.
What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is 222, cash beans 551, new wheat is 328.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens when? On Wednesday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather. Your local newscast comes up next.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Illinois House passed a measure today imposing even tougher limits on local government's ability to take private property for economic development. The legislation, brokered by lawmakers and municipal officials, would make governments meet a stronger burden of proof for why private property is taken. And in cases where that burden is met, the measure would give those private owners more money for giving up their property. The bill now heads to the Illinois Senate, which approved a different version last month. Urbana's acting police chief has been slated to take the job on a permanent basis. Mike Beely was named today as the successor to Eddie Adair, who retired last year. Beely is a 22-year veteran of the Urbana Police Department who served as Adair's assistant chief. Mayor Laurel Pressing says Bealey not only has the qualifications to be police chief, he has earned the support of his peers. The Indiana Election Commission is pressuring two election software companies that have their systems installed in three-quarters of Indiana's counties. County clerks say software from MicroVote and Election Systems and Software hasn't worked properly. Indiana's primary election is next month. Nearly 150 East Central Illinois women are now learning the results of a six-year study on preventing breast cancer. The women were among thousands nationwide who took either the traditional anti-cancer drug tamoxifen or the new drug raloxifene. Results released this week suggest that raloxifene was just as effective as tamoxifen in preventing cancer from developing without tamoxifen's known side effects. First quarter profits are up 69% for the parent company of the Chicago Board of Trade's Futures Exchange. CBOT credits increased market data prices and rates per contract, as well as strong volume for the earnings improvement reported today. Indiana tourism officials hope the phrase "restart your engines" will persuade tourists to race to Indiana. The new slogan unveiled today replaces the old "Enjoy Indiana" slogan used for the past 8 years. Tourists spend nearly $8.9 billion a year in Indiana. For AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows.
And I'm Todd Gleason for AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL Radio. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
They don't get much finer than they are here in the Midwest for a day. 73 degrees, sunny skies this afternoon outside of the studios here in Champaign. How's the rest of the Midwest doing?
Well, not too bad. There's a lot of the sunshine out there right now. One of the misnomers, if you will, about upper-level cutoff low-pressure systems is that everybody thinks that it rains everywhere all the time, and that's not the case. There is an upper-level low over the northern portions of the plains right now, and a lot of times these upper-level lows, if they're far enough to the north, they produce a lot of dry air in the backside of them, and that's what's happening right now across the central plains and a big portion of the central Midwest. And what will happen as we go through the next few days is that upper-level low will move over to the Great Lakes region. That'll start spinning some clouds around across northern Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, northern Indiana. And at the same time, we'll conjure up some new moisture coming up out of the Gulf of Mexico and kind of merging in with an old frontal boundary. We'll end up setting off a few thunderstorms, some of which might be strong. This will all occur on Friday into Saturday, coming up out of Arkansas and moving across the Ohio River Basin. That will create a wedge of dry air in the central sections of Illinois. Don't expect a lot of rain to occur in that part of the state, but as you go further east, the odds will increase that there will be rain. That will include portions of Indiana. More likely, though, Ohio and eastern Kentucky, as well as, of course, Michigan, will have that upper-level low.
And then if you look to the southwest, will they get the rainfall that we've been talking about a little bit on the air over the past couple of days?
Yes, there will be a little bit of precipitation that will develop tomorrow into Friday. It'll come out of the Texas Panhandle. It's part of that same frontal boundary I was just talking about. It will generate showers and thunderstorms from West Texas into the southern and eastern portions of Oklahoma. And unfortunately, the rains will not get their act together very well until after the precipitation is exiting the plains. So I don't expect to see more than maybe a half inch of moisture across the Texas Panhandle and western sections of Oklahoma. But we could get anywhere from a half to maybe three quarters, even a possibility of a localized one inch amount in parts of Oklahoma, just on the eastern fringe of wheat country. But this event will not hold together very long for that part of the country, and we don't expect the rains to be much better. But there's another storm system that should move across hard red wheat country Sunday through Tuesday of next week. That should give us better coverage of rainfall. Still on the light side, but better coverage in most areas from Nebraska and Colorado into Texas.
Drew, do you watch soil temperatures at the 4-inch level?
I do. I do indeed. We have an estimator that we use here. We certainly are warming things up across the southern parts of the region are plenty warm at the moment, but we do have some coolness still hanging on in the north. It's not quite all that significant. We are going to see some, some slowdown in germination in the far northern areas because of the cool weather they'll be with us for the next several days. But I think we'll kick it back in as we go into the late days of April, early May.
Thanks for staying with me on that question. I appreciate it.
Okay.
And we appreciate having you this afternoon.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. Hey, don't forget to visit our website at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all kinds of great information, including the latest USDA report numbers when they come out on report days, along with all of the ag programming, or the majority of it, that you hear on the air. So if you miss something, you can always go back and listen to it on the web at WILLAG.org. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to our weekend newsletter right there on the website. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.